All right, welcome everybody, and welcome back to the Configure It Done podcast, a brand new series which is titled S4 Do's and Don'ts. And Bethany, you've got an absolutely brilliant guest on today.
Yes, so this is Luke Keddie, who is the Portfolio Program Director for PowerLink. So amongst many, many, many other plates that he spins, he is currently in charge of their Rise with SAP program. And Rise has been a huge topic in the SAP community right now. So we invited him on to give us some of his biggest takeaways from the program that they're doing.
Excellent. Now Bethany, I know you've been talking to Luke on a couple of occasions now, and we really want to get an idea of his role and the programs that he's looking after and looking to Rise. And Rise is a bit of a buzzword at the minute. And I know you've done a LinkedIn poll earlier just to ask the audience any questions they would like to hear Luke answer. And I think you've got a couple of those questions straight away. So Luke, if you don't mind, we're going to start the podcast by asking you those initial questions from the audience and get right into the crux of the value that you're going to add, okay?
Cool, let's go.
Welcome to the new and improved Configure It Done podcast. The Configure It Done podcast is now a place where we interview senior thought leaders in the SAP space across Australia and New Zealand. And the aim is to tap into their knowledge so we can pass on their insights to the listening SAP community.
This podcast is in partnership with the Black Dog Institute, who aim to create a mentally healthier world for everyone. If you wish to donate to the cause, please click the link below.
So the caveat being, because you're not completely finished with the program, I know all of these you can't answer, but if you can do your best, it'd be amazing. One was, can you take me through what the initial program has delivered so far and how the decision to move to Rise actually came about?
Yeah, sure. So PowerLink's been on the SAP transformation journey for 3 or 4 years. I started probably nearly 4 years ago when we were looking at migrating off on-prem Oracle to Azure on HANA. So we finished that and then immediately went into the S/4HANA upgrade. So go to market, find a partner, and then not long after that, within sort of 6 months, we've done a migration to S/4HANA 2020, which sort of unlocked some initial value, I suppose, from the base capabilities, but then it really sort of fed into a finance kind of transformation where we spent quite a bit of time working on SAC for planning and budgeting to get a more contemporary budgeting and sort of P&L platform into reporting, into Fiori, and then we sort of went off into largely strategic data, where we've got quite a heavy integration into our Azure data lake, into our Snowflake data warehouse, and really supporting the business with really like rich and real-time information, which is a large part of what was missing in the legacy ERP environment. Since then, we've been working around the edges. We've got lots of sort of ancillary programs in to help us in our overall portfolio. So we use Enable Now for training and learning. That's a big win. We've got in the new Datasphere and the Sustainability Control Tower. So some of the SaaS platforms on the side, we're sort of adding value around the side while we're preparing for not just the technology uplift Rise, but we're also preparing for supply chain transformations across materials and inventory, warehouse, transport. So it's a busy time, but in order to sort of answer the question around how do we get to Rise, in the background, kind of, we've always been looking to sort of keep a contemporary S/4HANA system. So at some point recently, we realized that we were on a 2020 platform, sort of limiting us in some of the applications that we wanted to start to roll out across the business, particularly in some of the business-facing Fiori tiles. There were things that just weren't available in sort of portfolio management and other areas. So we made a decision middle of last year to upgrade to S/4HANA 23. Earlier this year, and it would have been probably May, we went live with S/4HANA 23, the latest feature pack. And in order to get to there, we had to go through the fun of doing the database upgrade, doing the operating system upgrade. We were going to sit there for a while. Rise was always on the agenda, but it was sort of downstream. It was still quite a new product, right? So I had expected that in order to get there would be quite a lot of hurdles in terms of moving towards standard processes or almost like a managed SaaS platform for ERP, which is always very difficult when you're in we've had SAP for 20 years. So it's quite an inbuilt sort of, complex. It does have customizations in there which are necessary for our industry, and I'd always thought that unpicking those wouldn't have a lot of value before we moved to RISE. But there was always sort of an awareness that in order to get the latest capabilities, SAP is going to stop investing in the on-prem systems, so you need to move to the managed systems to get the AI capabilities and some of the more SaaS platforms. Some colleagues and I went to the utilities conference in Europe this year, and we met lots of overseas customers. And in Europe, it feels like the sort of customer base is a couple of years ahead of Australia. People were doing things that we'd never done before. They'd finished things that were on our roadmap. And in talking to a couple of other utilities, we kind of learnt that it wasn't as tricky as that. So in the end, what we did figure out is that because we'd already gone through the, not the pain, but the challenge of upgrading to 23, upgrading to the latest database versions, we could quite easily move to a RISE platform without an associated functional or technical upgrade in the background. So the actual program itself didn't seem that tricky. It was largely a replatforming within the same hyperscaler. And then largely from there, a testing and integration and networking program, which is all very technical, and we've done it before when we did the HANA program. So our assessment was that we could probably make a jump to RISE, redo some of the work we'd done recently, where we could just dust off our integration test plans and everything else that we've done for S4, but also re-pick up all the networking and the cloud kind of work that we did only 3 years ago when we went to Azure in the first place. And that sort of turned out to be true. The program itself wasn't particularly tricky. The technical move, once we had the design in place, is actually not too hard. So in the end, we had expected it to be a large project, quite messy. In the end, when we learnt that it wasn't, it made sense, I suppose, financially and also in terms of getting access to the latest capabilities and also just going first so that we kind of can get access to the best resources in the market before they get taken up by bigger customers.
Which you have done, and we highly recommend. This is a conversation we're having a lot right now, because a lot of our clients, and this brings me to my next question, but a lot of our clients are pushing off S/4HANA because the economy is in a very strange place right now. People are very nervous. You can feel it everywhere, and that trickles from the top all the way down. But also they've not been entirely sure how to do their S/4 transformations, but the longer they wait, the less high quality resources essentially will be available, right? Who have experience with the kind of projects they want to do. But that brings me to my next question, which I know our audience will find really interesting. So I remember when we spoke a few weeks ago, you said that you did the SAP program so far really cost effectively and really low risk. And those are two key words that will reflect well with the current market, because we're feeling very risk averse. And again, the economy is not in the best place. So can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, of course. So I don't think an SAP transformation needs to be a big bang. I actually would highly recommend that it's not. Doing it all at once is quite, problematic, and it's messy. And in the end, projects are in the way of business benefits. So the bigger you make a project, the more it sucks resources in and time, and your BAU teams, and then your executives, and then your capital. It all just sort of disappears into it. And before you know it, the outcomes are lost by the very nature that you're trying to deliver the project, and the project itself becomes like a too big a focus. And I'm always a big fan of making sure that the business comes first, and what the business is trying to operate and trying to get to is what the focus is. And one of the ways that we do that is to break the program into multiple independent pieces. One of the simplest ways to do that, and what was really kind of helpful, is our move to Azure Cloud in the first instance, as the very first step, unlocked sort of that capability. In a three or four tier landscape, it's quite difficult to do quite a long-term functional project without interrupting the business. If you're on a hyperscaler environment, what we found pretty early on is that we could simply duplicate our environment and run parallel projects, simply meaning that we could do more than one at once, but that they weren't connected in terms of a critical path. So my advice to everybody is, at all times, disconnect functional and technical change programs from each other. So S/4HANA as an upgrade itself is simply, as I understand it, that you have to run what's called the Software Update Manager, or the SUM tool. Everybody has to do it the same way, as the only way to upgrade both the HANA database and the S4 platform. And that's largely a basis task and a technical task. Happens over probably a week and a half, but the actual uptime is about a week, and the downtime when you have to be off is a weekend or a long weekend if you get one, if you're lucky enough.
So, Luke, what you're talking about, is it a brownfield or a bluefield, or what approach was it?
That's a brownfield approach. Yeah, so we did brownfield because we didn't – I suppose the purpose is of why you're doing the project in the first place. So we wanted to get to S4 to unlock capabilities. We weren't immediately chasing capabilities at the moment we went live. So what we were able to do, and to answer Bethany's question, is to deliver them in manageable chunks. So the first thing we did, if we do HANA and then in parallel we go to market for S for HANA, that's easy. If we're doing the S for HANA upgrade but in parallel we're doing a cost center restructure – in the functional sense, we can do that in a parallel environment and go live after. So once you've gone through the dev or test environment, you just duplicate it into a parallel hyperscaler landscape, and then the functional teams go. What we originally were thinking of doing is running them in parallel in the same landscape, and pretty quickly we learned that it's very hard to get business decisions sometimes, and if you're designing a new platform, you do not want to hold up the technical program to do that. The technical programs where I was sort of going with before is they're very easy, because they're testing programs. In a brownfield SAP program, the only thing that's different between your SAP processes and everyone else's is your customizations and how you use it. So if you use the SUM product and everyone has to upgrade the same, the only thing that will make it not work are your customizations, your processes, and anything that you've got in there that has been accumulated over time. So the game is simply just to test those as fast as you can, get the technical SIs out, because that's their bread and butter, is to upgrade the system, connect it all, and then leave. And if you can do that, you can get that nice and quick and easy. And then in parallel, you can do the functional testing, the functional projects without holding up each other. And if that gets stuck, you can slow it down. So we run multiple SAP programs in the environment at all times, but they're all very small. So if one sort of gets in trouble or it's no longer a priority, we stop it or pause it and then come back to it, but never have we got ourselves in a situation where we've overcommitted and have to keep moving on a program that's either overspending or in trouble, because they're never very big and they're always very small scope, and then they get delivered.
So look, this is fascinating, because this is the third episode of this S4 Do's and Don'ts series, and on the second episode, the guest we had on was comparing bluefield, brownfield, greenfield. And one of the things he said about brownfield was the reason why companies don't do that is because they're paying a lot for essentially the same system. So I love this point of view, because I'd love to know your point of view, and particularly the company benefits with going down that brownfield route. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to why you're doing the transformation in the first place. So if you're on a different platform, or you don't have modules, or you're trying to get off a different ERP for whatever reason, you have to go greenfield. There's no real other option. Sure. Any sort of business like ours that uses most of the SAP, we have most of the modules. We're quite a heavy user. In order to change that to greenfield, we would have to interrupt every single operating business process in the business, including payroll, in order just to get back to a new clean system. So in order to do that, that's highly disruptive. And I'm a big fan of even an ERP program like this not being in the top 20 things that the organization cares about. It should just happen in the background, because it's in the way. So our strategy, or the strategy we went for, is always technical first, set the baseline, and then from that advanced platform, then you build the platform on top of it. So for instance, we put in S/4HANA 2020 and then did a cost center restructure, changed the hierarchy, and then no longer had to use sort of like overnight batch reporting. So the business is able to do P&L reporting in real time. So if someone posts a journal, immediately it's in there. If someone wants to make changes, it's immediately in the results. So having that base platform and putting in sort of what I would call the finance improvements without having to then go and change all the finance processes is highly valuable. Similarly, we don't have a huge finance team. There's a couple of, it's getting bigger, but in terms of asset management or AP or AR, there is still quite a small team. There's only sort of half a dozen people in there. So in order for us to move to, if we went greenfield, or if we went heavy transformation to update all of the finance processes to best practice SAP, we would be spending millions and millions of dollars to change processes for half a dozen people, and it's not cost effective. So what matters in an ERP for me is it's there to catch information and to present information for decision making for executives. So as long as the information is correct, depending on where you are in your kind of your cycle of your business, if you're trying to save money, then maybe you do want to get more efficient processes. But if you're chasing rich information, accurate information for decision making in a growing business like ours, we've gone from 800 to almost like 2,000 people in a couple of years. We need much better, much faster, much richer, much more accurate, much more trustworthy information. So that's the game for us, is get to the latest platform, trust the information that's coming into it, remove manual entry points, get the data directly out of SAP, so through the data sphere or into Analysis for Office, so that the information can be trusted and it's not going through an ETL cycle so that you're not sure where the results are there. We use, in terms of Fiori, rather than kind of making reporting, it's, again, very easy. Instead of having a big transformation program around UI, we just identify the insight to action Fiori tiles that are of value to AR or AP, for instance, and surface and bring forward open transactions need to close, things that are outstanding, POs that haven't been closed or paid in a while, to sort of fix up the financials, which then flows through to the balance sheet report and being accurate. So in the end, it comes down to, what's the purpose of your ERP platform? If you're trying to shrink your workforce, you might have a different one. If you're trying to get off an old one, old ERP platform onto a new one, you go greenfield. Bluefields, to me, we didn't need to do that because we're not a complex, multi-region, multi-country organization. If you're carving out parts of your business or selling or buying, that's where you would look to leave data behind and do a bluefield. So to us, brownfields is fine. And there's a few things that people don't quite understand about brownfields, and it's probably something I often tell people when they ask, is that you do not have to change anything when you go to S/4HANA, not in 2020, not in 2023. So our approach to moving from ECC 6, we actually had EHP 8. We went from 7 to 8 while we were in market, just to test the upgrade path, get cut over sheets, get everyone sort of aware before it was risky to go to S/4. To downgrade S/4HANA using compatibility back so it looked exactly the same as EHP 8. So when we moved and changed to the S/4HANA platform, but our systems integrator's task was to make it look identical if it couldn't be. So when the users logged in day one, people won't believe this, but we actually got a lot of calls or people asked if we'd actually gone live because it was invisible, because it looks the same. The only thing that really is different when you move to S/4HANA is a couple of things around accounting structures, around business partners and a few others. But outside of that, our game was to make it back. So that means that we have 800 testers, and if it doesn't look the same, it doesn't work the same. Even in PBT, they can tell us. Post go live in hypercare, they will tell us. We don't have to train people on how to use the new processes. So it's essentially, to Bethany's question before, it's very cost effective to do it because we're not training anybody. We're not designing processes. We're just bringing it back to standard. We're turning on all the Fiori tiles in the background, but we're not putting them into the security profile. So then we can roll them out slowly when we need to. And that's how we did it in, I think it was 5.5 months from, or maybe 6 months from the start of the contract to go live. We went live on the day we said we would with no defects because we didn't change too much. And then from that base S/4HANA platform, we have now a highly contemporary ERP platform, which is linked deeply in with our data warehouse. So the richness of the information and the self-service capabilities we have to the executive and it's just the trust that we have in the information, particularly financials, because it comes direct from the ERP is one of the biggest benefits we have. And now on top of that, we're able to do lots of functional projects with our internal teams, without SIs, because we just do them slowly. We roll them out directly when people want new capabilities, and our internal SAP team can do that without my team's involvement, unless we're doing large kind of change on the side. So, for instance, Enable Now was implemented by BAU. So was BW/4HANA. So was Process Orchestration. So was Process Sustainability Control Tower. So was Enable Now. So I think I said that before, but we're not getting involved. We don't have SIs. They just rolled out by the team. We test them and then they're ready. So having that
takes away, that covers a couple of my questions later, actually, was whether you leverage SIs. I've got two takeaways from all of that. Yeah. One is that I've never heard brownfield described so well before.
Yeah.
That's the best I've ever understood Brown Fund and its benefits. But also I'm hearing a lot of respect for the business and the fact that technology is there to help the business run better, right? And this is, we get called for roles all the time, so frequently, where what they need is somebody who can kind of mitigate risk between breakdowns of communication between the business and technology teams, because that's really, really common. But what I'm hearing is that you've kind of set everything up from the top down to make sure that technology knows the reason it's there. The technology team is there is to help the business run really smoothly. And I'm sure your business users appreciate that, or hope they do.
Yeah, it's the only way to do it. The technology, so the entire purpose of an IT application, in my view, is to automate or systemize an operational process and to capture data at first point for later use. So in and of itself, it is of no value. The operational process itself is what matters. And that's what happens regardless of the system. So if the system goes down, if you go to manual processes, they already know how to use it. So changing their process into a system actually is in the way. So the business is trying to do maintenance. They're trying to move freight. They're trying to do finance. They're trying to do purchasing. They're trying to make customers happy. They're not super interested in the system they use. They just need to know what it is so they can operate with it to get the information they need, or to put the information in for later, users downstream to use. So focusing on what the customers actually need, so customers of IT, is kind of a big part of how we run our program. Because if you're not focused on the value to the customer, then you could be focused on internal processes that are unnecessary, that waste value. They value the time, or they could be non-value-adding, or no one could want it. And in the end, you're just rolling out systems for systems' sake, and that's disruptive. So when we're framing up projects or looking at the timing or how we're going to roll it out, the business always comes first. And we very often have to look at what else is happening in the landscape. Is this still the right time to roll out this new capability? And that's why it's always quite handy to have these smaller projects, because sometimes you've got to put them you've got to put them in caretaker mode for a minute while the business is going through a large change or a restructure, or there's a big customer opportunity and they don't have space for it. But if you've got this massive beast of a project that must hit a go live because the burn costs are too high, you're stuck, right? And then that's really disruptive. So
that makes sense.
There's so much to unpack there. That was brilliant. But if I'm a CIO and I'm listening to this podcast, and we had to make that choice between greenfield, brownfield, bluefield, and I'm nearly there with brownfield. Yeah. Like, out of all that, what would you say is the top three benefits? Because essentially, like you said, it is the same system, and I could be paying a hell of a lot of money for the same system. So I'd be keen to know, what's your top three benefits for a business for going brownfield?
All right. Three. Okay. So the first one is, it's just faster. If you go greenfield, you have to redesign every process from scratch and augment a lot of what's in place already, give away a lot of your customizations, which you may need. So it's a long negotiation, a very long sort of lead up before you'll get any benefit at all. So to me, if you go brownfield, you could have benefits within a year from the decision you make, go to market, find a partner, implement it, you're in. And then you can start to have benefits, even if it's just the HANA platform running faster, or even if it's just some new capability for a couple of niche areas that are screaming out for it. The second one is, almost always, if you're doing a greenfield, you need to change your payroll system. And that is a big project. It's not to be done lightly. So if you're changing payroll, the purpose of a payroll project is to pay people on time, accurately, exactly the same as the old payroll system did. So yep. If you're doing that, you're going to spend a year or 2 years running a payroll project to just pay people the same as you did before, for no benefit at all. So that's always a big flag for me, is how do you not touch payroll? If it's working and award interpretation is working, if you take that project on, it's going to be highly risky, highly disruptive, and it doesn't have any benefits. So avoiding, if you can do greenfield without touching payroll in award interpretation, cool. Particularly if you're a small business, but I would avoid that, mainly because it's quite disruptive. And the last part is, particularly if you're doing greenfield, is it's around sort of data, I suppose. Depending on what you're moving from, you could move from a platform to the new systems, but you may not have the minimum data that you need to create your asset master in a greenfield, or to create anything else, or you may not have a home for lots of historical data that you've got, which means that you're actually playing with your the value of the ERP is the data that you've got in it. So if you have to enrich your data sets before you can go live, that's a huge piece of work. If you have to clean or change your nomenclature or consolidate, it's quite a lot of work, and you don't actually have to do that if you do a brownfield. There's three things that we learned when we did brownfield that are kind of, I don't know if they're myths, I suppose. One is that there is a heavy and very expensive customization or custom code cleansing piece. It's actually, there's not. So we have tens of thousands of custom objects. It's quite a heavily customized landscape. This is almost something we tripped over, but luckily. So one of the very first things we did before we went to S/4HANA, which made it quite easy and helped us go to market, is that because we have, again, our Azure landscape, we took a copy of our production environment and we just smashed through a change to S/4HANA in about 7 weeks. We had a vendor come in. We didn't do any design. They just upgraded it, did a bit of PVT, did some connections, and then handed it to us. And then we ran a full business UAT over that and just found out that it worked. So what that meant was that we thought there were lots of legacy systems that we owned, CRM, Works Manager, old BW, old, I can't remember what it was, but Solman, Solution Manager, that were kind of older, that was on paper and in the kind of readiness check said they were incompatible and we would need to upgrade them before we could go to S/4HANA. So we had kind of on our roadmap a year's worth of upgrades, like valueless upgrades for these satellite systems. But because we ran that UAT, they just work. They still work and we still never upgraded them because they're not business critical on the side. So you don't have to do that upgrade around the side. But where I was getting to before is inside S/4HANA is a thing called a custom code cockpit, I think, something like that. And we just pointed that at our production system and it told us what custom code we actually had to clean up. And it was like 40 things because this could be wrong, but what I was told is the only custom objects or custom code that doesn't work in S/4HANA that works in ECC is like statements. So if you have a custom object that has a like statement, you just need to change that and they will work. So case in point, we ran a tool that a vendor had over the top of our HANA database, and it said we had hundreds and hundreds of manual hours worth of custom code cleanup and thousands, like it would have been nearly $1 million worth of manual work to clean it up. But we didn't have to because we knew that we had already upgraded and none of those things broke. So you could clean them up and you could have a cleaner system, but your S/4HANA system will run with 99% of the customizations that you've got in there. Secondly,
that's a very interesting point. Yeah. Data has been a huge focus for a lot of our customers in data cleanups. That's a really interesting point. If it's already upgraded, if nothing broke, then you're fine.
Nothing broke. So the last thing is also, there's also a kind of a myth that you need to do a really heavy data validation and data cleansing. When you move from ECC, particularly EHB 8 to S/4HANA, or 2020 we went to, and probably even 2023, the only master data that actually changes really at the top end is the business partner table. So that's the customer, vendor, employee master data. You just can't have duplicates. You've got to pick a master. So in the end, the data cleansing that you have to do before you move to S/4HANA for EHP 8 is just around the business partners. So that's address cleansing, phone number cleansing, just making sure there's no duplications. And we simply just exported our, went to market, sort of. We found a partner under NDA. We gave them our vendor and customer master, and they simply ran it through some tools they had, which I think were Australia Post tools. They did some stuff to check business and ABN names are accurate, and they sent it back to us, and we just LSMW back up into the AP AR before we then did the biz part change, which is a technical change, and it just worked. And that was, I think it was like $5,000. Is all we paid them. And that was all they needed. Because it's not, it wasn't anything other than just a address, phone number, business ASIC number check. And that was all. So the size and scale of what you expect to have to do for data cleansing, custom code, and satellite system remediation is much, much smaller than you think. So you can do that in a sort of little parallel project like we did while we were going to market. Where that then leads us to is that we had, before we went to market, we had a system that was S/4HANA. We had already run a UAT, so we knew every defect. We knew every defect fix. We knew the integrations. We had the SPDD lists. We had all the active integration files. And we could send that to market and say, this is everything that you'll need to upgrade. This is everything that you can see. And therefore, without those gray areas, there's far, far less risk for the SIs. They know what they're in for. They know the full scope of what it will look like. And they can quote and provide quite competitive and sharp prices because they're not quoting risk. And that's how we did it cheaply, because once you eliminate that risk both on both sides, you can get a fixed price deal that people are quite confident they can hit. And then it's competitive, and that's, again, getting rid of those gray areas in commercials is the way to make it cheap.
Oh, Jay, I don't know if I want to go live with this podcast now. We're talking people out of giving us roles and everything.
Not a big team. But we largely did it on our side. A big part of the way I like to operate is to build the internal capability and manage the different work streams. So we will run program management, training, change, functional, technical, commercial, testing on our side. We will have a couple of vendor partners on our side who run assurance, so we don't know how to do everything. So I like to work with sort of smaller partners where we get stability of resource, and they support us on our side as our kind of QA partners, our experts. And then only then, when we need big technical change where we can't do it, we get an SI in. We give them a very skinny scope. We get them to do what they're good at, which is technical change. We do all the training documentation. We do the change. We do a lot of the test planning. We do a lot of the cutover planning, the integrated plan for scheduling, and we just leave them to do what they're best at. And then once they finish, they leave, and it keeps it super clean and very uncomplicated.
It's good that you don't outsource ownership, because the projects are doing well. Yeah. That's kept in, so yeah, it's kept in house, and yeah, you can't outsource ownership. So that's brilliant. I've got a question about Rise. Now, how does Rise differ from other SAP's offerings? And the other question that we've had as well was, do you actually need Rise experience to actually do that program?
So Rise is essentially a managed service offering from SAP. So how much you want to give to them to manage is up to you. So there's a minimum amount in terms of managing the platform, including the cloud hyperscaler, the operating system level, the DB system, the really base 000 client capabilities, and then up into basis. But outside of that, you can choose how much of the functional stack you give them. So you can give them none, or you can give them all of them. So that depends on what your strategy is. So what we're looking for initially, again, keep it simple, we want to hand them the tricky part. So managing Azure is hard. Managing Linux is hard. Managing HANA databases, high availability clusters, that's tricky. It can be done, and our team's up for it, but it's quite a distraction from what we're trying to do, which is sort of grow into a more contemporary organization where we don't have to patch servers all the time. It's like kind of disruptive. So in order to answer your question, I'll probably say this. Do you need specific Rise experience to hand the technical platform to SAP? No. All it is really just a cloud hosting offering from SAP, because Rise isn't anything other than either a technical project to hand the sort of the operating system database and sort of technical layer, which then is a testing program. So no different to an S/4HANA program, no different to an Azure migration program or a HANA database upgrade program. It's migration, post-processing, integration testing, networking. Rise is no different to any other cloud hosting. So no, you don't need Rise experience for that. If you're looking to take a lot of the functional capability with you, again, it's no different from a functional SAP project. It's how would you then use the SAP functional team to manage and deliver functional change, either from a BAU or from a project perspective, as opposed to using either a vendor partner or your own internals. My team hasn't had Rise experience before, but they have had quite a bit of experience in technical upgrades, functional upgrades, and managing SIs, particularly in the Azure space. There is a bit of a learning curve in order to get there, because what you're actually handing them is your day-to-day BAU basis in some respects, but you're also handing them the platform. And in our space, we have lots and lots of parallel projects going through. We have very specific requirements around disaster recovery, around how we work with processes about the ERP being a critical application system, and if it goes down, what does that mean for, you know, workarounds and things like that. So the advice around RISE is probably don't need RISE experience, but what you do need is technical and functional SAP experience and significant input from operating teams that actually currently manage SAP day-to-day, not just from a maintenance perspective, but also from a project landscape and from a DR and business continuity perspective, to make sure that once you move from your current state where you own and manage everything, that you've got really clear understanding and roles, responsibilities, races, you know, phone numbers, names, who does what in any situation, so that if anything, you need anything, you have a way to manage it in the future state. So that's probably what I would have a call at, is the technical project is easy, or easier than you would think. Essentially, if you're already on the right levels, or you've upgraded it recently, you're largely just doing a testing project, testing the network, testing the integrations, testing the functionality, and making sure that the performance is right. We've done that in Sandpit, no problem. That's where we're up to. We've finished Sandpit, we're about to take dev, but that test platform program worked perfectly. The greater work is in the operating processes. Depending on how much you hand to SAP, depends on how much change you've got within your teams, how much documentation you need around how in any situation you're going to operate, because ERPs are important. They actually sit in the middle of very important, critical business processes, not just finance, but payroll and maintenance and asset management, the whole bank, shebang. So if it goes down, for instance, if there's an outage or a network outage, or you do an upgrade and you need to roll back, we need to know exactly how to do that. So that's where the work investment is, in making sure that in the future state environment, you know exactly how it all would operate, because you can't rely on your genius basis guys and your genius integration guys, because they don't have access anymore to some of these really low-level stuff. You need to rely on the SAP team to do it, and that's fine, but you just need to know who to call, what the process is, and that's where I'd suggest the investment is, rather than being worried about how it would technically work, because essentially it's exactly the same system that we already had, just hosted in a different environment.
So this all sounds very, very smooth, very cost-effective, very, very quick. Obviously, no program is, easy, and no program would be smooth. Can you tell us about some of the unforeseen issues when you've done that RISE program that did come up along the way?
It's not been many. We thought what would be tricky was the networking, and we thought what would be tricky was the integrations. And some of those were simply just decisions. So how do you just taking it back a second to answer it. You can't take everything to RISE. So RISE will take contemporary SAP platforms, but they will not take legacies. So in most cases, probably like us, everyone's going to end up in a hybrid environment where you've got S/4HANA and maybe BW for HANA and a couple of other kind of new systems up in RISE. Yep. Everything else, if you've got BW or if you've got BPC or CRM or Works Manager or anything on the side, that's not going, and it can't go. So the integrations that you have to your web dispatcher need to somehow work. So you've got this split tunnel where you've got to go from your Azure environment to the SAP environment. If you've got still GUI as well as S/4HANA, you have to work out how to get into the RISE environment directly, plus your satellite system. So the networking is tricky, but once you have the design, you're laughing. But getting that kind of initial design was probably a lesson. It's not as easy as you'd think. There's quite a few complexities, particularly around sort of security in terms of firewalls. So you do have to be really immediately wise about putting in the right level of technical expertise from a networking and security perspective. It's not really an SAP project there. That's probably one of the first ones. And secondly, it really is just being really clear on what is it that you currently do in your operating environment. Because we hadn't really done it before, we did have to create a bit of some information assets that we didn't have around the BAU processes that weren't related to day-to-day. So we did have to start actively creating how do we do project copies, how do we do client copies and when, and how do we do disaster recovery, how do we how and when do we do HA? How does this fit into our testing pattern? So those, again, it's an infrastructure kind of view. And we need to include pretty early on infrastructure team members, cloud architects, and that sort of stuff. So we got some really good help, and we worked out pretty early that we needed that. But those early stages are not SAP, they're networking and integration. So we learned lesson pretty quick, but and we thought it would be a challenge, but that was probably my advice, is you need to start with that in mind and only later start to worry about your functional change, because until you've got it integrated, networked, and connected, it doesn't work anyway.
That makes sense. I'm really excited about this, Luke, and to get this out there, because RISE is a really hot topic, like I said at the beginning, with all of our clients right now. We're getting questions about it all the time and what we're seeing, and it's been hard to articulate exactly what's going to be trending. So this will be really helpful for so many in the SAP community.
Happy to help. Always happy to share. Hard won lessons, yeah.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much, Luke. And I'll pass it over to you, Dave, to wrap it up.
Yeah, Luke, how we normally wrap up the podcast is we always ask who else you would like to hear on the podcast. It may be a previous colleague, maybe somebody that you worked with, someone that's got a depth of knowledge like yourself. So I'm putting you on the spot here. But yeah, is there anyone that you'd like to hear on the podcast?
Probably. There's a guy who I worked with who helped me all along with sort of strategy. He helped me with, sequencing, gave us great advice around how to utilize the application and get the most out of it. He knows everything about SAP, and I don't think I'd be here with a successful program if he didn't help me. So sure, he's got lots of insights for you guys. He would be my go-to SAP guy, my guru, if you were going to look for someone to find out a bit more about how it all works under the covers and how you would structure a kind of a more complex program than what we've had at Powerlink.
Yeah, it'd be good to get an SIS perspective on those programs as well. So, we'll definitely reach out to Peter. But thank you very much, Luke. Thank you for those insights. That was absolutely brilliant. And, I hope you enjoyed coming on the podcast today.
Most welcome. All right, wonderful. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you.
Please like, share, comment and subscribe to the Configure It Done podcast.